roll over the back of Dumas once again as he hits the throttle, dives to the inside, and he takes the spot away from Dumas. Could that be the championship?
Welcome, everyone, to the 2024 Canadian Superbike Championship, the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship, and welcome to the podcast, as always. We're 10 seconds into the podcast, and Colin's sending me pictures of me doing the podcast. We've officially begun. If anybody wants to check out the season preview, of course, you can go back and check that out. We recorded it earlier on this week. Unfortunately, we did not have the presence of one.
Knee puck Bickle?
Yeah, he's here now. Don't
that,
worry.
That was a bit overdue, I think.
It's a drop on the board now. So it's here for the remainder of the year. So at any point, we can
knee puck Bickle?
It wouldn't be the start of the season without a couple of knee puck Bickles.
Daytona was amazing. It was where we launched this podcast. We came back. Obviously, there was a long time off. I talked to a couple of different people over the last couple of weeks who said, when are you guys going to start again? When are we going to start talking about CSBK? Well, we're back. The plan is for us, as we're sitting here inside of the Shannonville kind of media setup, to be doing these type of sit-downs leading into, of course, each round, wherever we are going across the country with all six rounds planned this season, and then doing some things live at the track, whether it be getting some riders or doing some things potentially even on YouTube Live. We're trying to get that sorted out, and hopefully we get that off the ground for people to enjoy. And then, of course, the recap will be coming for people after the round is done. But if there's one thing I know from Daytona, guys, that we said, like, oh, we'll do one a day. And then we got to the track, and we were just like, hey, you just want to go sit down? And it's like after practice, sit down.
What do you mean we?
Basically, we're just...
Somebody hadn't been to Daytona before and got a little carried away.
Well, it's true. I had a lot of fun while I was at Daytona. Did you guys have a good time at Daytona?
I don't know. I had this crazy man in my hotel room.
It was a great experience. I'm super excited to go back. But that leads us into the clip I played off the top, which is Ben Young had a hell of a Daytona. And of course, last time that we were here at Shannonville, it was Alex Dumas sliding off, and Ben Young goes on to win the championship, goes back-to-back. He's here now. He's already come in. He's taken his photos. We've done some of the cool video production stuff that our executive producer and everything else on the TV side is doing. Cam McFadden over there getting shots of these guys. But the red suit. Colin, first thoughts, the red leathers for Ben Young.
Well, I used to joke when I was racing that if I were paying for it, it was going to be red. So I don't have a problem with red leathers, although, you know, red leathers to me is more Honda and Ducati than what Ben's doing. And of course, the last podcast we did, which was only a couple of days ago, we dramatically skirted all around the biggest subject going right now is that Ben Young is going to be in Econoloop Pro Sport Bike on a Suzuki GSX-R 750, the bike that he was top Canadian on at Daytona.
Yep, absolutely. And so he's going to be running in, how many of these rounds do we know? Like, what is the plan? Are you familiar with what he's planning on doing?
Well, I believe officially all, but what I've heard is we'll see how it goes. And, you know, we have joked within the series that it's good news for everybody in Superbike if the guy to beat is distracted. And he probably faces significantly more competition in Sportbike than he does in Superbike, which I probably shouldn't say, but that is the general prevailing wisdom.
I'm always interested in this, Kim, in any sport, the idea that if you are in one category of something, and obviously racing motorcycles is very different from, you know, being in the NBA, because you can't say, well, I'm going to compete in the NBA and I'm going to go play in the G League as well. But do you think it could legitimately be a distraction? Like, could that hamper him at all? Especially, let's just look at this round, right? Because the year as a whole, we will play out. We'll talk about it as the year goes on this podcast. But do you think it could be a distraction for him? Or could it actually even potentially help Ben? Because he's on two different bikes, but he's just getting more time in the seat.
Well, I think Ben Young showed enough at this point that he probably doesn't need extra seat time. You know, he's a phenomenal rider and a very experienced rider. I think things certainly could go wrong to an extent and distract him, but I also don't think from a superbike point of view, he's going to let that happen. If it got to a point where things were really becoming a distraction, his focus is going to be winning another Canada Cup this year. And I think if things start to maybe get off to a bad run in sport bike, then he'll shift his focus back to simply just doing super bike. But if his intention is, you know, good or bad, to do the full season in both, it obviously has the potential to spiral out of control. But I think we've seen enough out of Ben Young to know that he can manage both those things.
Yeah, absolutely. The weather here, just to give people an update, is we are sitting on Thursday. I don't even know what time it is. Thursday evening, I guess, early evening.
Almost 6.
Yeah, is that it is supposed to be raining on Friday. Is it afternoon showers that we're looking
at? Late in the day. We're probably all right. That's what it looks like right now. And, of course, we're near a lake.
Yep.
So these things can slow down and speed up. But right now, generally positive, but the pressure will be on tomorrow to get rolling because things could start to unravel.
Even though we expect it in the afternoon, do you think we see people come out tomorrow morning and lay things down a little bit harder than they potentially would?
Yeah, I think you always have to do that when there's a doubt because, you know, timing is official. And if you have to use a different session, and normally they'll be told at the riders' meeting if that's at risk, that could play out. So, yeah, I think it's a worst-case scenario because a lot of people aren't ready. We haven't had a lot of good weather. So the last thing you want to hear is, you know, first thing out on the track officially, first time, you know, being timed against your competitors, that you need to get a time. You know, generally Friday at the first race of the year, you like to just work on setup.
Yes. Yeah. Trying to get things off the ground certainly is the challenge here at Shannonville. But I will say this, even from the time that we were here for the final round last year to being here this time, I mean, it's Thursday, the paddock feels full. Like, am I wrong in saying this?
I don't know. I haven't been around the paddock as much as you have.
I took my dog for a walk and I was wandering through. I'm like, this feels like a Saturday. And I know it's not exactly like, you know, the spectators aren't wandering through like it is and on the weekends and all the rest. And we hope that lots of people come out and enjoy the races this weekend here. But it did feel when I came in, I'm like, there's just more vehicles on a Thursday than and maybe that's, I don't know, week one excitement and people wanting to get in early or wanting to have that extra little bit of time to get things set up or whatever. But it just, it felt more energetic to me, which again, could just be the start of a new season.
No, you're allowed to have an opinion.
Yeah.
Well, also, I think the paddock feels different, and part of that is down to the fact that there's a couple of new faces and a couple of faces that aren't still here, and that opens up a lot of opportunity for certain guys that they maybe didn't have this time a year ago.
It's true. By the way, you showed me a picture of David McKay's red Honda. Very, very exciting that thing is big, beautiful red. And I have to say as well, pretty cool to see Honda on the backdrop of the podium, new podium set up here at Shannonville, slightly different location than we were last year. And everything is kind of already off and running, but nice to see him, nice to see that logo up as part of the manufacturer collection.
Yeah, and I think worth mentioning, the last time somebody ran for both championships, same rider, he was riding the same bike in both, and that was Jordan Zoke on his silver CBRs back in 2010, and he swept Superbike. It was the first perfect season on the CBR 1000RR and almost swept Sportbike, and it came down to the last race at Shubenacadie, and Alex Welsh, who at the time was riding for Kawasaki, went on to ride for Suzuki and BMW. Alex beat him at Shubi to spoil that opportunity to have the perfect season. So it has happened before, and Cam and I have been talking a little bit about people who've done it on different motorcycles too, because it's happened, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've written the sport bike and the super bike preview, correct?
Yep. Right up now. Both are up on the web.
Yeah, up on csbk.ca. So if you want to check those out, go there. But I'll begin kind of open-ended question here on this one. What do you think, now that you have looked at it, previewed it, all the rest, what do you think is the story of the weekend when we're recapping this thing in a couple days?
Well, obviously it goes class by class. I think if you're going to talk about the Superbike class, it's who can bridge that gap to Ben Young. Is the answer anybody? You know, is Ben Young going to run away with this thing and sweep every round? Or is there going to be someone who steps up and becomes a race winner or even a title threat this year? And obviously there's no shortage of candidates. You have Sam Grant, who finished third last year. He's the top returning rider besides Young. He seems ready for maybe that next step. And don't forget, it was here a year ago where he was leading the opening race of the season. You have Trevor Dion, and you also have a 14-time champion who seems to be flying under the radar somehow.
By the way, cool livery on the Kawasaki, right? The 40-year anniversary.
It's funny. I've been doing some writing in some of my parallel work because this is 40 years of Ninja, right? It's very, very specific. And one of the nice things about Kawasaki is, A, it's not just letters and numbers the way most of the Japanese bikes are. Yep. It's not just 53 R's, that it is actually called the Ninja, and that they've stuck with it all that time. And I'm an old guy who remembers the very first Ninjas here 40 years ago. And Colin Gibb, who was also a Kawasaki dealer, he was amongst the front runners in all the classes on the very, very first Ninja.
If a Ninja and a Fireblade come together in a fight, in terms of words, who wins? Which, by the way, the Fireblade video that you sent me was amazing. Was it Abe?
Yeah.
It was in the,
yeah.
I wanted him to be my dad by the end of the video. It was the most incredible, like, just, hey, you know what? We're going to name this thing something super badass, and we're going to try and make it as fast as we possibly can.
Well, I remember riding the first one, and it stuck out because it was one of the last bikes to have a 16-inch front wheel, which had some advantages, but arguably had some disadvantages.
It was also terrifying, according to that video.
Well, so the launch for that bike was at Savannah. Roebling Road is the name of the track, and I had raced there. It was a track I knew well. It's a track I really like. It's not that hard a track, but the last turn heading up this hill onto the front straight is quite daunting, and the CBR 900 RR was a real handful in that turn, and it was good. It demonstrated how potent the bike was, but there were a lot of adventures over the course of that launch, and I certainly cased the engine a couple of times, and that is a bad thing to do. That's very easy to crash, and people did have that problem with the CBR the first year, but eventually it all got resolved, and it was very light and very strong in terms of handling, and kind of took the GSXR template and just amplified it. So yeah, it was when that bike arrived, it was a really big deal.
Yeah, here's the next thing I want to talk about, right, is we've talked about, you know, whether it be Kawasaki and what Zoka's going on with the Ninja livery, and then the Fireblade and David McKay coming up, and then Ben Young on the BMW, and we haven't talked to, what's the bike that's dominating right now for the most part globally?
BMW?
Well, BMW, but also, I mean, in the World Superbike, yes, but MotoGP, I mean, the Ducati has been tearing people apart from various teams in this season so far.
Tearing apart, like we're all upset because we don't know if we're getting the works ride? That kind of tearing apart?
Everybody's concerned about contracts. Maybe we'll get to that at the end of this. But for me, it's amazing because last year, when we're talking about Zoke and Kawasaki, and Trevor Dion decides, I'm going to go somewhere else, do something different, and he ends up hopping on that Ducati. He came in here, and when you and I were voicing the races consistently, we were just going, man, they have put this thing together really quickly. Now they've done Daytona, which wasn't great for them, admittedly, especially the race, but the actual event itself, I would say, was a building opportunity to try and figure some things out and get more time. And the build, yeah, Trevor Dion was one of the only CSBK riders that actually got some testing time as well, because everybody else kind of got washed it out. But the Ducati coming in with Dion is so interesting to me because it feels like the potential is kind of limitless. Like, are we wrong for not thinking? Because in my mind, yes, Samuel Graham was third in the points last year, sitting behind Alex Dumas. Alex Dumas is not here. So you would assume, well, Sammy Grant's going to take that next step. I'd love to see it. Are we completely off base for not saying that the person who should be challenging Ben Young is a Ducati with Trevor Dion?
I think it absolutely could be.
Yeah.
I think it's very easy to see a scenario where he's winning races this year and fighting for a championship and being kind of the next thorn in Ben Young's side. There's also some risk in that project, as we saw in Daytona, but I also think the biggest thing for Trevor is that he's going to be comfortable now because he's back in his own program. And it's hard to fault Warhorse HSBK because they won the Daytona 200 for a second year in a row, but regardless of you know how it went for the team, it was clear that it wasn't quite a fit for Trevor, and now he's back with his own team where he's comfortable, in theory, with his own crew.
That's got to feel so good.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
To go from I'm basically being on this team, but I'm riding basically somebody else's setup, right? Essentially is what ended up happening.
Well,
with
I'm going to throw a little shade because good for them, they won. And obviously yeah. Heron's performance was fantastic and he dominated a race that's very hard to dominate. But, you know, I think it was a huge missed opportunity for Dion because he showed a lot of pace. And I think, you know, as typically is the case with Canadians, that we're all excited, you know, what he's capable of. You know, initially in testing, he was right there. And I think that they didn't deliver for him. I think they had another rider who was quite capable and he got lost in the shuffle. And, you know, some of the issues they had were pretty basic, right? Like brakes that don't work. Is you don't need our insight to understand why that's a problem on a motorcycle, yep. Right? So I'm disappointed how things played for Trevor. I think it's hard on him because he understood that he was capable and didn't really get to show it. And, you know, I was thrilled. I had a photograph that I took. And, of course, things are happening really fast early on in the 200. And I actually had a picture where Ben Young and Trevor Dion were together,
wow.
Which kind of indicates that obviously Dion had an okay race, that yep. He had the pace to run up front. But yeah, I think amongst the paddock, there's people who think the Ducati's a problem, maybe don't understand that this is not one of the bikes he was using at Daytona. Of course, those were 955 twins. Yeah. Now we're 1,000cc and 1,100cc V4s, the bigger Panigale. So a lot of people don't understand the bikes, and Ducati isn't the easiest world to penetrate for information. But I think that program is capable. I was talking to them earlier. They're in a pretty good mood about the whole thing. They're doing a lot of detail work. And when you're doing detail work on Thursday, that usually suggests good pace. And I don't think the bike that he rode last September worked particularly well, and it yielded some pretty solid results. So that's got to be good. And that bike is here, and that's probably the bike he's going to ride. But the bike they haven't finished is actually the 1100 bike, which in theory is more torquey and would be better for our track. So who knows who's going to ride what? And you know, frequently it's a panic because there's several people here with different bikes. And is it a B bike or a rain bike? Or, you know, have we finished it? Is it ready? Does it have a chassis set up on it? Or is it just a bunch of parts that we threw together to get it in the truck?
That's got to be terrifying, though, really. Like, I would think, you know, there's not a lot of fear in the paddock in terms of racing against anybody. But the idea that he was kind of on that bike.
I think there's some fear for Ben Young.
Well, yeah, but I would say that these guys have irrational confidence. Like, I know when you tell me that somebody is crazy, I go, oh, they must be, like, crazy then, because all of these guys are crazy.
Like Toprak. Crazy.
Like, exactly. Like, the basic level is like, okay, if you're willing to do this and do this at this speed and this danger, it's like, yeah, that's pretty wild. And then when Colin says to me, no, this guy's really out there, I go, okay, so he's at, like, a completely different level because the baseline is already so high. But when I say this, I say it because I think, as again, that Ducati has so much potential, and for them to be refining things and to know that he has comfort from what he accomplished last year on that bike, whether he rides it or not, I just think that it's such an incredible threat. And I mean, last year, Sam Garand could have sent basically the message, right? Like, I'm here. I've won for my first time. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stick around. And instead made a couple of mistakes, and the year as it went on was kind of up and down. And I wonder if this is my kind of theory and why I tossed this question out to start this conversation, whether Dion ends up basically, you know, we get whatever the weather is here on Friday, and he lays down a good time in the morning. Let's say we get clean quality in. He puts that down. We go to race on Saturday, and he just flies to the front, and he's wheel-to-wheel with Ben Young in race one. And he basically is trying to send a message of, I've got a badass bike underneath me, and I'm not going anywhere all year long. If he sends that message and doesn't make any mistakes, to me, that just cracks the entire championship for the 2024
CSBK. Well, what you're talking about is Casey Stoner. And yeah, it's a different series, and it's a different class, and it's a different story and different tires. Actually, it's the same tire. It's Bridgestone.
Yeah.
But, you know, Casey Stoner had a good rookie season, and his second year in MotoGP, he just blew up, right? And it changed. It moved the ground under everybody's feet in the first race, and then suddenly no one's looking at any of these situations with the crystal ball that we all count on. It's unknown, right? This track, this bike, these tires, how's it going to play?
Well, and I think it's also an interesting question, sort of the last thing you mentioned, where it would, you know, should that happen, whether Trevor wins, whether Sam wins, whoever, that it would blow the championship wide open. And I actually wonder how that championship, I'm not disagreeing, but I wonder how it would look, because you look a year ago, Ben Young was leaving this place down 23 points to Alex
Truma.
Yeah. And that's a guy that had beat him for the championship
Alex
before.
Alex blew it open last year.
Yeah, and Ben was able to storm back. So if, you know, there's five laps to go and Ben is locked in some sort of back and forth with Dion or Garand or Zoc or whoever, is he going to be comfortable to say, you know what, it's a long season, I clawed back from things last year, I can do it again? Or is there going to be a statement of, I don't care whether it's, you know, you've never won a race, or whether you've won 78 of them like Jordan has, I want to win every race this season. And I think that's going to be the interesting question for Ben.
Saturday in September, right? He maybe didn't have to beat Dumas, and in the last lap he did. Yep. And I think that tells you something about the impression he's trying to leave. I think that there's a little part of Ben that maybe doesn't think he's getting as much respect as he deserves, because he's a smooth guy. He's not like a Garand, he's not super aggressive, and so he doesn't attract the same kind of attention. But I think you know, Daytona the last 2 years has certainly shown how tough he is mentally, and you know, he expects to be the best. And I agree, and we see this particularly in MotoGP, where the season is so long, there's so many races because they race Saturday and Sunday. You don't need to win, but maybe you do, right? Yep. And when you come back and you pull to the podium and you jump up in the arms of your team and everything, it sends such a solid message that you can do that. And I think you know, Ben has ego just like every top athlete does, and that's good. I mean, that, you know, we're putting the thing on TV. We want some yes. aggro, right? Yeah. So I don't think he's going to give it up. But you know, circumstances, you know, tires, whatever it is, there could be something that's making you think. You know, Cam's point is good. When you came out with no points, then coming out with second place points, you know, and you tend to remember whatever went wrong most recently, right?
Yes.
But you know, Daytona. Stepping back, Ben's effort, if everything had gone perfectly, he might have been two positions, I would say, ahead. And I think he thinks that too. So Daytona was pretty strong, all things considered, yeah. and it finished strong. Like, he made a lot of good decisions and not too much to criticize in how that effort went.
Yeah, it's so true. There's so many different directions I want to go with that, because one of the things that comes to my mind is the question of how much stock can we really put into Daytona being this separate entity and this crazy different track and everything else, and then bringing it here. I feel as though it's basically kind of like, in a basketball term, Uncle Mo, right? Momentum. It's just like, it doesn't matter what bike you're on. It doesn't matter what the track is. Momentum is a thing, right? Momentum matters. And that, you couldn't have much better momentum than Ben going into this, coming off of that.
I also think the momentum is all subjective to how you're going to look at it, though, yeah. as well. Because if you're someone like Trevor Dion, and yeah, we've already spent a lot of time on Trevor, but you know, he's probably thinking, well, you know, to an extent, screw Daytona. The last time you saw me in CSBK, I was running yeah. at the leaders, and yeah. I had the pace to win those races. And obviously, Daytona is so foreign to everything that we have up here, and it's unlike any other track on the calendar and any other situation on the calendar. So someone like Trevor might look at it as, you know, I don't care what happened, you know, 6 weeks ago or whenever it was. All that matters is the last time you saw me in CSBK. Whereas someone like Ben might look at that momentum as meaning a lot more.
We have the situation with the established veteran who's in a control, what appears to be a control situation, and what does that young up-and-comer do? What did Ben do when he joined the series full-time in Superbike and right away was going after Jordan, and we're right away wondering how long before he can beat him, right? That's where Dion is. Like, he's not confused about what the goal is. The goal is to unseat the guy to beat. That's the whole point of this. That's what everyone's setting. You know, Sam Garin, you know, he might not have ever beat Ben Young, but I can bet you in his mind that is the point of this weekend.
And Trevor Dion, as you say, we talked a bunch about him here because I think the potential is huge, but he was on that Kawasaki alongside Zoke last year. Now it's Connor Campbell. Just an observation from him coming in to do his headshot and everything else. Connor's huge. I had no, like, maybe this
tall,
is maybe,
tall.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying is, just, I came from, you know, the CFL Combine, the CFL Draft about a month ago, so my brain is still a little bit in, oh, the measurables and this and that. He walked in and I was like, man, that is a big dude to be riding that thing. So I'm really interested to see.
To be fair, he is relatively tall, yes. and we do have a few guys like that. He was a little bit heavy. He is not anymore. He's done a good job there. I think.
Yes,
also,
this was not a weight comment.
Yeah,
point this out clearly.
But I also think it's worth considering, and you know, the Isle of Man is coming up, which is the far extreme of an example of this. That riding a superbike on a tight track, being a little bit bigger, might not be the end of the world. You know, it's not MotoGP, and it was funny. You know, at COTA, the MotoGP guys are watching the bagger guys talking about their series, and I'm sure the bagger guys are thinking, well, it's a lot of scrutiny from the best riders of the world, but most of those guys couldn't touch the ground on a bagger, right? Mark Marquez, wouldn't matter how much money they gave him to ride a bagger, I don't think physically he can do it, right?
Well, I saw Danny Pedrosa swing his leg over the top and climb up on top of the bike in his relief duty there. I was like, huh, he's that small, eh? Didn't realize that.
You hear about Luca Marini being some, you know, freak giant that towers over everyone in the paddock, and then you stand next to him, and you're like, oh, this is just a dude.
I mean, don't get me started on what's going on with HRC. But
nobody at HRC knows what to say about that. So, I mean, it would be hard for us to blow it up more.
Just a side note on, like, the HRC MotoGP stuff that I do find legitimately funny. Their social media accounts right now, every time that they post anything, it's just, like, behind-the-scenes footage of stuff, and it has no comment about the races. Like, here's some clips from the weekend. And then it's just people getting onto bikes and riding out of hot pit, and you're like, okay. There's nothing else to talk about right now.
I'm a Joanne Mir fan, so if we talk too much about HRC, this is going to turn into a support group.
We're going to have plenty more to discuss on these things. I do want to round this out just because this is obviously a Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship podcast, but we are guys that enjoy talking about all sorts of different bikes. We were kind of bouncing this around earlier, and I do find this to be interesting. Before I get the one final thought here, did you script your one final thought? Did you? going to give it to you now.
This is the peak of the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship as we head into the final lap. The white flag comes out.
One lap to go.
The white flag flies.
It's our last lap flag.
It's the white flag, the final lap.
Last lap flag, one to go.
I know this is not a visual entity right now on this preview podcast, but the reason I just play that clip is because out of nowhere, Colin just reached out and grabbed cue cards.
So I'm trying to sneak up on you, but of course you control the board, so you ended up sneaking up on me, so it didn't work at all. So what I just wanted to do was remind myself that on the other card, Econoloop Pro Sport Bike, thank you very much, Econoloop, we haven't mentioned Seb Tremblay at all, right?
Oh,
And we talk about Ben and how expectations are he will be hard to beat, and everybody in Pro Superbike is focused on him. Well, arguably, more people are focused on Seb Tremblay, and the irony of it is the guy I just mentioned who's the Superbike favorite is also focused on Seb Tremblay. Last weekend here at Shannonville at the regional, Elliot Vieira on the Ducati, who's definitely, he and Seb have had some great races, he indicated he is not intimidated with the GSXR 750, and now there'll be two GSXR 750s likely at the front because I think everyone expects Ben Young to be up there. But that that race, those three people I just mentioned, I think that everybody is super excited, not just for Saturday, the first national of the year, but all season, like what's going to happen with those guys, and talk about people wanting to mark their territory and stand their ground. I mean, it's going to be really something. I'm hoping it will be, and I think, you know, Pro Sport Bike, which has arguably been a little more entertaining the last few years, might be a lot more entertaining this season.
I'm sorry that I jumped over Sport Bike. You did write the preview. Give me one thought on Sport Bike before I down send the other one.
Oh, I was going to say, you're throwing me off. I had a Superbike.
There you go.
Superbike. No. Well, it's sort of similar, actually, to what we talked about in Superbike, where can anyone sort of bridge that gap to Young? In this case, it's can anyone bridge that gap to Tremblay? And it might be Young if he's going to do the full season, ironically. But let's say, hypothetically, it's not Young. Is it going to be Elliot Vieira, who would probably argue that, hey, I'm kind of the forgotten guy from a year ago, considering he missed literally straight up missed three of the races and still finished, I believe, fourth in the championship and wasn't that far off. So, you know, what's he going to do over a full season? John Lang is certainly a guy to watch out for. You have the rookie stepping up, Maverick Sear, Phil DeGama Blanchett, et cetera. So,
well, that whole army of rookies is going to be a terrific story.
I think Sport Bike, as we've talked about, it's a very wide open class, and it's easy to think, well, you know, we have Tremblay full time and we have Young potentially. Those days are done. I don't know that they are.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. Thank you for actually getting me back onto track for a second. Now I'm going to take us back off track. This is the great thing about sitting in the media center, and this is why I like doing the podcast live. I just looked over, and Cam was admiring his work on the laptop here as he's putting together the new intro that we'll be
Cam
running.
Cam 2. Yes,
Cam
2.
Cam 1 is sitting here. This is Cam 1.
Knee puck bickle.
Yeah, that's Cam 1.
I don't know which nickname's better.
Cam 2 is sitting over there, and he just looked over at me and pointed at his computer, and we just started going, "It's so good." So if you want to see what he's so impressed by, you can check that out on TSN with the races once they're up on air.
I do have one more actual final note, because you threw me off from the one that I had prepared.
Knee puck bickle.
Oh, boy. How are we 27 and a half minutes into a round one preview, and we've still barely talked about Jordan's Oak, is my takeaway.
I know that we
part a lot of time on Dion.
Apparently,
and
none of
Young.
Us have studied history at all.
Yeah, I believe it or not, I think this guy has won here probably a couple of times. And yeah, it's easy to talk about, you know, his age and all the injuries he's overcome the last few years. But this is probably the healthiest Jordan's Oak that we've seen since the last time he was winning races. And if he can get up to speed quickly on that new-ish ZX10, I think he'll probably be a little more focused this year, running more of an individual program. He's still affiliated with Connor, but this is probably the best version of Jordan that we've seen in a couple of years now. And if his resume has shown anything, it's that you probably shouldn't doubt that.
Mea culpa. As soon as we brought up Zoke, I mentioned the livery. I didn't mention the rider. Sorry. That was, I was so impressed by how good the bike
it
actually
is a
looked.
Really nice
I was,
looking.
I was actually at a bike shop in Hamilton recently, and they had one of them sitting out back. And I asked, you know, who got that? And they said, one of our sales guys. It's like he saw that they had the 40th anniversary one and they wanted to jump on it. But you're right. I mean, Jordan is incredibly talented. And to be healthy and be back at full steam, like even when he was, and I've thought so many times in this winter, in this off season, about him having the bike catch on fire on the grid at CTMP, jumping over the wall, which again, like for considering how he was feeling at that time last year, jumping over the wall itself to be able to go and get the B-bike is a heck of a thing. Jumps over, gets on, and drops, like I've made this reference several times in conversation, but like a bat out of, he literally looked like Batman. Like it was a scene from the back where it's like just down the hill, out of the pits, crossing the, basically the line as you're coming out of the pits. And then immediately, I remember you calling it on the actual broadcast column where you said, he's up into like eighth. Like it was just like drop down the hill and up over the crest of two and all the rest.
So he's the only guy who actually has a line in the pit lane,
yeah.
Right? Because he's done it before. And I mean, when it happened the first time, which was in the rain, it was a different, completely right. also crazy situation. But, you know, his bag of tricks is so vast. Mm-hmm. And I often talk about how Jordan is lucky, and I don't mean that as a criticism. I mean, if he's in it, he's in it to win it, and his philosophy with one turn to go and he's in eighth spot is somehow he's going to win this. And, you know, those big mix-ups in the last couple of turns so frequently break his way. So, yeah, I can't over time, you can't take it away from Jordan. You know, winning that many races, so many things have to go right, but your mental approach, your thinking patterns as a winner are key.
Fastest qualifier predictions.
The obvious betting favorite is Ben Young. He was, I think, half a second faster than everyone last year. And if you take away Alex Dumas, he was 0.8 seconds faster than the next rider. But if we've seen anyone unlock one lap speed pretty close to him, it's probably Trevor Dion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. I don't know that Ben will feel the pressure to yield that kind of time. And given that Pro Sport Bike qualifies ahead of Superbike, he may be on a little bit of an adrenaline letdown because he probably is feeling the pressure his first time out in Pro Sport Bike. And to be fair, he rode Pro Sport Bike years ago occasionally, but that was not the focus. He was mostly racing in the States. So I think, unfortunately, as much as we love to talk about Superbike, I think Pro Sport Bike qualifying will be a big indicator of what we're going to face this year.
Well, we will have our eyes on it for you all during Friday session. Again, we'll keep you updated throughout the weekend. Here it is, round one at Shannonville. Great to have the Fallen Riders here as well, bumping the music earlier on today. Excited to see them around. We got the Flat Track stuff coming up on Saturday evening. That's very exciting. We hope people come out again to Shannonville Motorsport Park and come enjoy some of the action. For Colin Fraser, for Cam Bickle. Yeah, Kneepuck Bickle. Thank you. It's on the board all year long, buddy.
It's going to be a long year.
It is the 2024 Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship. Thanks for being with us. We will talk to you coming up from Friday at the track as we are underway in 2024.